Thank you, Richard.
He thought it was Richard because he's on
the So, welcome, welcome, welcome. I was going to do put your hands in the air because I have performance anxiety, but I think I'm okay. So, I'm going to talk a little bit today. I'm going to talk again tomorrow, but I'm going to talk a little bit today about why eye movement therapies work, because there's a whole lot of misinformation out there, especially about EMDR. I'm EMDR trained, so I can speak kind of to both sides of it, but I was first trained in eye movement integration, and that was after I took my NLP training back in, well, a few years ago. And Ron Klein was my mentor. He was from the American Hypnosis Training Academy. He's passed away in the last couple of years, but he taught me a lot. So eye movement integration actually came out as a result of EMDR. EMDR came out as a result of NLP and its eye movement model. Although Francine Shapiro, until the day she died, said it had nothing to do with NLP, it has NLP written all over it. So in the book, I spent a little bit of time talking about how EMDR must have come from NLP because of the components that she borrowed, like divided consciousness, like then that was Erickson, and then the VK dissociation after that. She just simplified it, and when she had people talk about traumas that they had experienced, asked them to visualize it in front of them. There are many other reasons why EMDR owes a lot to NLP. However, Francine Shapiro was a fantastic businesswoman. And as you know, EMDR is universal. 10,000, maybe 11,000 people have been trained in EMDR since its inception. So when I learned eye movement integration, I saw that it worked. I have trauma in my own history. Just to give you a big rundown, a small rundown, I'm sorry. Working class, grew up, Catholic schools, all of that. Became a working alcoholic at 18. Spent the next 25 years doing that, but I rose in academia at the same time. I got a PhD in special ed administration, until one day I was kind of frozen in my family room rocking chair and could not get up. Got into therapy. And after a few years, because I was an alcoholic, I came to the conclusion through a lightning bolt that hit me that it was time to let the drink go. So I let the drink go. Stopped smoking. 1 year later is when I was hit with memories of sexual trauma from when I was a child. I can still notice when I said that word trauma, my voice goes, right? These are remnants that anybody who's been through something like that has, and we shouldn't be surprised by that, right? It goes with the territory. It was at that time that I decided I didn't want to be a university administrator anymore, and I started doing some unusual things where I was, things that were too cutting edge for the president, and he called me in and said he didn't know if he was going to fire me or if he was going to give me a strong letter of warning. And that was my cue. Okay, I think I'll do something else now. So I went back to school, got a counseling degree, and opened a private practice that I did for about 20 years, specializing in trauma. So when I learned eye movement integration in 2002, I could see that it was something that was different from all the rest. I had had all the therapies used with me, CBT, hypnotherapy, exposure therapy, you name it. I tried it. But when I saw Ron Klein do that experiment, that demonstration with a woman, I was like, wow, I got to learn this. So my hope for you, thinking about one of the presentations I went to this morning, giving you a little suggestion, is that when you walk through those golden doors at the end of this presentation, you're going to have to learn MEMI, multi-channel eye movement integration. So how do we get from there to here? 2002, I had a private practice. I went back to work, and I was using it, and it was working, and it was working, and it was working. And a couple of years later, I thought, you know, I could pass this on to other people. So I started to do some trainings. But right away, I came up against the problem. And that was that EMI didn't really have procedures. It didn't really have a written history or documentation. The advice, and I talked with Steve and Connie Ray Andreas. Steve, before his passing, I think it was maybe 2016, and telling them what I was doing and getting their blessing and all of that. I started to write procedures of my own, basically. I started to play with the eye movements because the suggestion from Steve was that you could do any eye movements. Try the ones that seem to work well for you and then use them. That was not enough for the people that I was trying to train. They wanted to know why, especially in Asia. They really want to know why. They want to get you down to, you know, the very basics. But what does it do? Well, I'm glad to say that now we have some answers from research. And I think if people take this information to heart, it is going to turn things around in two ways. It's going to turn around the whole approach to trauma in this country, because right now, as you probably know, cognitive or cognitive behavioral therapies are the recommended therapies by the APA, the Psychiatric Association, just about everybody. However, the research has shown, Van der Kolk in his book in 2015 pointed out that CBT is no more effective than simple talk therapy. So you can get the same results. I can give a lot of reasons for that, but I won't go into them because it's part of the lie that we've been fed. I go into that a little bit in the book. There's a chapter about why cognitive and cognitive behavioral therapies are no more effective than other therapies. If you do large group studies, and there have been some meta-studies looking at the studies that are controlled studies to show that CBT does work. But then when you gather together 9 different studies of CBT and what was the other one, cognitive processing therapy, put it all together, compare it to a group that never had any cognitive therapies, they come out the same. 6 months later, 2/3 of them still have PTSD. So, my take and the NLP take on what's most important, and the book is focused on trauma. However, when you learn MEMI, you can use it with any problem state, just like you can most NLP techniques, right? You just have to know how to apply them. So it was written for trauma, and the idea that you have to pull in cognitive models to help you with that is just not true. I'm not going to spend a lot more time on this part, which is the kind of research and basis for it, because I want to tell you how it works, and then I'm going to ask for somebody to come up, and I will show you how it works. So the volunteer that we're looking for is someone who has an issue. Let's say you had a squabble with your sibling like 6 months ago and you haven't been talking. And you love your sibling, but you just can't let go of that. You want to let go of it, right? But you just haven't got to the point where you open that door and said, I'm going to let go of it and walk through it. So we're looking for someone who has an issue that you would like to let go of. It could be a car accident you had 5 years ago, and every time you get in the car, behind the wheel, you're still like this, right? You have that trigger, that response. So we're going to do a demonstration. It will take about 20 minutes, I would think. So think about that. If you could meet somebody in your office, and my sessions are always less than an hour. So if you do 50-minute sessions or 60-minute sessions, then you can do this whole protocol in an hour. Now, as to why they work, I'm going to talk about three different studies, and I'm just going to write them down so you can look them up. I do have this 10 Reasons Why. It's a marketing brochure, but you can download that from my website, either multi-channel eyemovementintegration.com or my last name, which some people prefer because it's easier, Deninger.com, Deninger.com. So this research is in here. I'm going to talk about three studies, the first of which came in 2022. So for years and years, we've been looking for the answer to how fear memories are formed. We've known for a long time that the amygdala overreacts, right? When we get a perceived threat that comes our way, the amygdala overreacts, and several of the other limbic organs underreact. So the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala kind of shuts down communication with it so that you can't form a decent memory of what the experience was. The hippocampus, that saves all of our eidetic memories, our visual memories. It also dates and timestamps what we did when we did. And that's where we go when we want to get the information about what I had for lunch yesterday. Because I see an image. If I'm normally organized, according to the eye movement model, my eyes go up to the left. I access that image. I don't visualize it up there. I just go there to get it. I visualize, like, in this area here. This group of researchers in the U.S. at Tufts and Tulane University, they discovered what they believe is the mechanism that allows the amygdala to warn all the people in the limbic system. This is a threat. Norepinephrine is a neurohormone. It stimulates, let's say this is the amygdala, okay? Although the amygdala is a little thing like this. Let's say this is the amygdala. Norepinephrine stimulates some neurons here at the base. And those neurons cause the amygdala to start to oscillate. And that's the beginning of a fear memory. So there are other contributors to that that contribute to norepinephrine actually taking that action. But the amygdala is oscillating. And when it oscillates, it also oscillates the neural networks in the brain that are responsible for the fight or flight mechanism. Okay? So now we have evidence. We can actually show, if we're in the laboratory and somebody is, well, I'll go on to the next study. This one was 2018. And this was done by Mace et al. In this study, it was of mice. So what they did basically was they had mice that they positioned their heads on a platform so they couldn't move their heads, right? And they instilled a fear response in them, and they did it with a loud noise. Honk! Sorry.
She moved her head.
That's going to be on the video.
Her amygdala is probably going like this right now, right? So they installed a fear response that way, and the amygdala is going like this, right? But what they did then, and this was a study that was sponsored by both the EMDR Foundation and a university in Scandinavia. Their heads were stabilized. They had them follow bars that move from left to right. So the bars would go up and down like this every 3 seconds. And you can imagine what that caused the mice to do. Their eyes. As the bars appeared on the left, they go there, and then it drops off, and then it appears over here, and they go there again. Okay? Bilateral eye movements. Same that are used in EMDR. Same that we use in MEMI, but only in one portion of MEMI. Okay. So what do you think happened when the eyes move back and forth? The amygdala stopped oscillating. And the more the amygdala stopped oscillating, the less the fear response that the mouse had. So now we not only understand the mechanism that gets it set up, but we also know that eye movements actually calm the amygdala. And the third study, was also in 2018, and this was by De Voogt . Now this was a study using college students as subjects, and they actually did two studies within that one study. In one, they had the students do what we would call working memory tasks. They called them two-back tests. That's a specific type of psychological test where they show you a bunch of numbers and then they take them off. They show you another bunch of numbers, they take them off, and then they show you two numbers and they say, which number was in the first set of numbers? Okay, so it's a cognitive test. And we've known for some time, actually, since about 2008, that cognitive tests of that kind can downregulate emotions. Didn't know why, but we did know that from a seminal study by a guy named Delgado. So that was one group. But they also instilled a threat response in the college students with a loud sound. I wouldn't do it to you again. Loud sound, amygdala goes. And instead of following bars, they had them following a laser dot. Same thing, causing bilateral eye movements. Like that. And they also found that the amygdala did calm down. The amygdala is the center of it all. This is the one that, you know, pushes that button that says, let's go, with the sympathetic nervous system. So the cognitive tests also downregulated emotions and also quieted the amygdala at about the same level. So we're saying that those two techniques both worked. If you read the study carefully and you look towards the end, you will see the researchers kind of hinting that, I'm going to give you my language that I took as an interpretation. Why don't we just use eye movements? Doing all those numbers is pretty complicated, you know, and, you know, what kind of cognitive tests are you going to come up with, and how much lab time are you going to have to use? Are you going to have a therapist in a room with a monitor with numbers, you know, to go across? So that's one reason why eye movements, simple bilateral eye movements, and I'm going to propose when you add eye movements to all the locations in the visual field, it becomes much more efficient. Because when Shapiro developed EMDR only doing this, she had a problem. She was trained in NLP. She worked in John Grinder's training office when she was a graduate student. She knew the eye movement model through and through. She couldn't do anything that was going to approximate the eye movement model that has specific locations, you know, for different types of processing. So if we do it this way, your left is going to be visual past, visual future, visual constructed, auditory future, constructed, auditory past, kinesthetic, and internal self-talk, right? So when I developed multi-channel eye movement integration, what I did was I took the NLP eye movement model and I acted as if all the locations were correct. I just said, I'm going to do it, right? And let's see what happens. The research on the eye movement model itself, I did a deep dive into that. And what happened with the eye movement model was it got so much criticism when it came out. It was 1976 when Robert Diltz did his research. And Bandler and Grinder had already come up with the eye movement model pretty much. And what Diltz did was to try and validate what they were proposing. The research stopped on it until there was a study in 1987 that I think is very important. A guy by the name of Michael Buckner did a doctoral dissertation where he looked at these four positions in the eye movement model. So the auditory positions here and the visual positions here. He trained NLP people to silently watch videotapes of people who are responding to questions that were sensory-related questions. So if I ask you, tell me about the first bike that you ever owned, what color was it? You know, to get that information, my eyes have to go up to my left. So that would be an indication that, you know, if I saw it on a videotape and I saw their eyes go up there, which, you know, you flip it when you're watching somebody else, I would know that it was a visual past question. 0.001 of the time, they were correct for both the auditory and the visual accessing positions. So that's the best research we have. I wish somebody would do a replication of that study because it might be interesting. Okay, so that's the history. That's really why this all works. But now we're going to add in NLP. And that's what multi-channel is, multi-channel. I hesitated to add that to eye movement integration because it's such a mouthful. And people sometimes say, why didn't you name it, you know, Z or something like that, you know? But it is critical because not only are we using the eye movements, we're also using metaphors, embedded commands, direct commands, and reframes as part of it. So, how are we doing on time?
I have some water for you, if you'd like.
Oh, you are a charm. Thank you. She could see my lips sticking together.
It's the nurse in me. I couldn't.
So, and time?
3:25.
Okay, lots of time. Okay. Let's do the demonstration now. So who among you has an issue that... She jumped.
She T-Rexed it for sure.
So let me look at you. Let me ask you, when you think about that issue that you have, what happens?
It'll be coming up on 2 years. I was in the...
No, don't tell me what it is. Okay. Just tell me what happens to you physically and emotionally.
Tension, like extreme tension, panic ensues when there's resurfacing memories from it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
High anxiety. Yeah.
High anxiety. Okay. And you would like to change how you react to that, right?
Yes.
Does this happen every time you think about that?
When I go back to it, yes. When I'm in a similar-ish situation, because it's a seasonal for the most part.
Okay.
Yes, I was taken aback, actually, at how strong it resurfaced.
Okay.
Because I thought I had dealt with it.
And your name is?
Ann Margaret.
Ann Margaret. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's neat. Don't go down that road, right? Come on up, Anne. So the way we're going to do this is we're just going to have to stand, because if we sit on chairs, it's going to be too hard for people to see. So I'm going to kind of walk you through the model. I'm not going to, well, I'll just tell you what I'm doing while I'm doing the model, okay? It's 10 steps, basically, and there are some repeated steps. So, Anne, you're a hypnotist? Mm-hmm. Were you always a hypnotist?
To some degree, I found out, yes, but technically certified 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Did you have a career before that?
Yeah.
Okay. What moved you into hypnotism?
Actually, it was self-healing work. I've been in the healing arts for decades on a variety of different things, between Reiki and readings and then mediumship, like a whole slew of different things. And then COVID hit. I was home. I was bored. I kept seeing this ad for hypnosis, and I took the course and graduated within the year, and voila.
Voila, and you're here. Here now with me today,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was establishing rapport. Okay? So that's step one. Step two, it's really important that you want to release these reactions that you have to this problem. Is there any doubt in your mind that, you know, that you're not sure? Or is there any reason, any part of you that might want to hang on to these responses that you have? No.
Go.
No. Definitely committed.
Definitely committed.
All right. Absolutely. All right. That's step two. That's the agreement to change. Super important, and it becomes even more important because sometimes you have to do it two or three times through the session, because they'll say yes in the beginning and then find out, ooh, but I'd have to do this. And then, you know, they're back with some doubt again. Okay. So in step three, we're going to anchor a resource.
Okay.
And this is typical NLP, anchoring a resource. You've done it before?
No.
No?
In this terminology.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So when we anchor a resource, we look for the opposite emotional state from the emotional state that you have to the experience. So if you could use one word to describe the emotional experience, what would it be?
To describe what the emotional experience was, one word?
An emotional word to describe how you react to it.
Oh. Comes like flight. Like really want to run away, scared.
I've got to get out of here.
Got to get out of here.
Okay.
Dr. Mike, I'm going to suggest that you flip so the camera sees your face and can hear your voice better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay, so the emotional response that's the opposite of what you usually experience, which is, I've got to get out of here, is what we're after right now.
Okay.
So if you could think of an emotional word that was the opposite of, I've got to get out of here, what would it be?
Emotional word for safe. That's a good question. Freedom?
Freedom?
You know, to me, it's an emotional word, feeling free.
How about serene?
Serene is great, yes.
Serene is great, yes. Okay. I wouldn't normally suggest, but because we're on a time crunch, serene. Okay, so I want you to think about a time that stands out in your mind when you were absolutely sure that you were serene. Mm. The best example of that.
Okay, got it.
You got that right away, didn't
you?
Yeah, okay. So now we're going to do a little hypnotic technique.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, you can do this with your eyes opened or closed.
Okay.
If they're open, I just ask that you kind of stare over my shoulder.
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So take a deep breath. That's right. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to drift back in time and settle into that experience, that moment in time when you were absolutely serene. No doubt in your mind. That's right. That's right. And notice in your body where that emotion, that serenity, is most prominent. Okay. What I'd like you to do now is I'd like to you to let that emotional serenity in your upper chest to spread. You can experience it as heat or movement or tingling. Let it spread down over your shoulders. That's right, through your elbows, your forearms, your wrists, your hands, your fingers. And even at the top of your head, let it ooze down the side like the egg that you would crack on somebody's head as a joke. That's right. And let that serenity go down now through your upper torso, into your midsection, down into your thighs, your knees, your calves, and let it tingle your toes. Serenity. 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 Good. Good. Very good. Now what I'd like you to do, Anne, is slowly come back by opening your eyes, but bring all those resources with you. So you can still have that serenity in you. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Right. Great. The spine.
Good.
Okay.
So what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Egg McMuffin without the ham.
Mm-hmm. Without the ham?
I don't know why that's important to me, but Egg McMuffin without the ham.
Makes sense to me. Okay, so if I were to say the word serenity, mm-hmm. what happens?
To the Egg McMuffin? No. Sorry. It's very light. I just see it feels like sunshine.
Okay.
Yeah. Warm.
Close your eyes.
Okay.
Let that serenity, where it started, spread out again over your shoulders, down through your torso, from the top of your head down, through your ears, your hips, your knees, your calves, your feet. And now, take it to the top. Take it higher and higher and higher. Take it to the very top where you're never, ever going to forget that serenity again. That's right. Serenity. Now you have serenity. Good. Now bring that back with you. Good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Anne Margaret, you get a lot of joking about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought probably you did.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I say the word serenity, mm-hmm. what happens?
It's here, it's moved.
Okay.
It's up in here, but very light, safe.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Calming.
Mm-hmm. So anytime I say that word serenity,
mm-hmm.
while we're doing what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
you can recreate that feeling, and you will feel that tingling in your scalp.
Okay.
All I have to do is remind you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I turn around and then I turn back and say, serenity.
Yeah. Focus immediately goes into
okay.
that spot. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, that was anchoring the resource. I had to do a double take there because I threw her off by asking her about breakfast. When I asked her about breakfast, it's something we call break state, right? In NLP, that's making sure that you exit what you're doing, have a moment of, you know, whatever, and then go back, refire the anchor, and see if it creates the kinesthetic feeling, okay? So I redid it, and we have it now. Okay. So the fourth step is something we call therapeutic dissociation, okay? Unlike the other therapies that use eye movements, today I'm going to, there is an image, right, of
mm-hmm.
that experience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to ask that at some point I'll ask you to project an image of that out there on the wall.
Okay.
You won't be in it.
Right.
Because you're a distance
like seeing
away.
Like a picture kind of thing.
Like seeing a picture. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the past. We're here in the present.
Mm-hmm.
That's a distance away and we're close.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's ask you about the image, which is the beginning of the pretest. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in color or black and white?
Color.
Is it a movie or a still photo?
It's a very slow movie. Like it's a still photo that's got just a little bit of movement to it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, slow motion
yeah,
video.
Yeah, very slow motion.
Okay. Is it color black and white, did I ask you?
Yeah.
Color?
It's color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it fuzzy or clear?
Clear.
Clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we use a score from 0 to 4. 0 is no intensity for the image.
Okay.
And 4 is the highest.
Okay.
1 is mild, 2 is moderate, 3 is high, and 4 is the highest. So gotcha. When you look at that image, what score would you give it?
I immediately got 3.
3. Okay. Yeah. So we'll move on now to the next major part. You probably have a physical reaction when you see that. Where is that located?
This part here is tightening up immediately.
Okay, here?
The
tendons on your neck.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything is, yeah,
okay.
Tightening up.
And what score would you give that?
If out of, like,
zero to four.
Okay. Three and a half shows up.
Okay, three and a half. And what the emotional feeling that you suggested was, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah.
How strong, how intense is that feeling?
Four.
Yeah. Okay. And we use a SUD score, a scaled score from 0 to 10. So we're going to say that that's at a 10.
Yeah.
Okay? Because mm-hmm. that's how you remember it every time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Okay. So do me a favor. Do this.
Okay.
Shake your hands. Okay, we're going to get to work in just a minute. So I'm going to ask you to just turn yourself this way a little bit. Yeah, well, not too far. There we go. I'm going to use my fingers, so there are 4 sets of eye movements that we use. So you're going to be projecting the image out there.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, you are serene.
Mm-hmm.
When I say serene, mm-hmm. do you feel it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very quick shift.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is what Volpe called reciprocal inhibition. So we're setting up a stimulus where she's serene, and it competes with the negative stimulus that she's been living with for so long. Okay? All right. So we're going to do a set of eye movements, and then we'll do a retest and see.
Okay.
Okay? So let yourself engage that image out there,
okay.
And watch my finger. That's right. You're not going to move your head, just your eyes. This is a little bit like splitting your awareness. You can watch this finger in the foreground and still think about that experience
mm-hmm.
in the distant background. Good. Still thinking about that experience. Good. Look at me. Good. So that's a way of diverting attention away from there to me. Say watermelon.
Seeds.
Seeds. Why do I get people like this up here?
Watermelon seeds, but I like watermelon seeds. It's a good thing. You can plant them.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, so we had a break state, I would say, right? Engage the image and tell me if it's the same or different.
Softer.
It's softer. What does
yeah,
that mean?
Meaning like it's not so much a picture anymore. It's almost like it's fading, if that makes sense. Like it's just, it's becoming fuzzier.
Okay.
It's not nearly as clear as it was, like tremendously not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was a 3, I think.
Yes.
Right? What score would you give it now?
A 1.
Yeah.
So
it makes it
definitely
better.
It's really, like I know, because I know what it is, I could make out kind of like the silhouette, so to speak, of it.
Of course.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But no, it's significantly faded.
Yeah. You'll always have
somebody
a memory
else,
of
they
that.
Were to say, yeah.
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 You'll always say, we're not about forgetting memories, right?
Yeah.
We're just remembering them differently. It's like we're creating a new memory on top of the old one.
Yeah.
Okay. What about the physical sensation that you had this?
Mm-mm.
It's not there?
Just tiny,
mm-hmm.
but not, instead of like feeling from here to mid-back,
yeah.
it's like little, like a dot. Feels like a dot on each side.
Okay.
That's about it. Yeah.
And I think the score was 3.5. Mm-hmm. What score is it now?
Be down to less than a 1.
Less than a 1?
Yeah.
Right.
It's amazing that, yeah, the image is.
Okay. And what about the I got to get out of here.
Oh, the four? No, it's in the past. It's not confecting.
Yeah. What score would you give it?
Ooh, none.
None?
Yeah, no, like it'd be like a point. I know, that's the way I am. Like 0.4.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's still there, but it's like not nominal. It's not even a full.
Okay. Okay.
Number. Yeah.
So if we started and we said it was at a 10 on a set mm-hmm. score, what score would you give the whole experience now?
I don't know that I would. For some reason, it's like I don't want to quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's not relevant anymore. So
okay.
I don't want to assign a number. If I was to assign an actual number, it would be zero now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to do one more set. There are four sets in MEMI. You might not need to do a second set. Although this is unusual, after the first set, sometimes after the first set, nothing changes. But we're going to do a second set, and then we'll see what happens then. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it has changed, but I'd like for you to project it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Image out there.
Okay.
Okay, that's right. Now just put your eyes on my finger. There you go.
Okay.
Now we're going to do some triangles here. Good so far. And we're going to reverse it. And I'm going to reverse it again. And you may find that your thoughts about this will change. And now we're going to do a big circle, encompassing everything, and reversing it. And everything about this experience is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, shrinking it down to the size of a pea. And let it go. Okay. Say pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
Ah, seed.
Seed. Pumpkin seeds are good, too. Well, that's impressive. Yes. Thank you. Well, that was amazing.
Well, let's finish up. Mm-hmm. So after doing a number of sets, I will ask you now, tell me what it's like now.
It's blank, actually.
There's no image?
No, now it shows up like it's a blank canvas,
mm-hmm.
but with a frame around it.
Okay.
That's how it's presenting itself. But the canvas itself is just blank.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll do something I haven't done before, but I'd like to ask you to just walk a few steps in that direction and turn around and come back to where you are here.
This direction?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we're starting a new slate. You just mm-hmm. stepped out of the frame that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is about the future. This is called a future rehearsal. So you're feeling great right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is change. There's going to come a time, like next week or the week after, when you would be in a particular place and you would normally be triggered
mm-hmm.
by that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to imagine that you can place yourself in that future situation.
Okay.
And tell me what you think it's going to be like.
Peaceful.
Peaceful?
Good music on in the car and, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoulders are dropped, not tense.
And do you think this problem is going to be manageable going forward?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. The last step, well, this is the last step. There's a second part. What I'm going to ask you to do now is just take a minute to appreciate what you accomplished today.
Hmm.
I created an opportunity mm-hmm. for you, right?
Open
but
space,
all
yeah.
the change took place inside
yeah.
of you,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that with your eyes open or closed, but however you do that.
I see myself patting myself on my back.
Awesome.
It's like, well done. Yes, okay.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you.
That's it in a nutshell. I mean, there's all kinds of bells and whistles as you go along. We are doing a second webinar, so I'll be recording that probably early November. It'll go up on my website. Right now we have a clinical version that's designed for therapists that has tests and assessments that you would use in a clinical setting. This NLP hypnotherapy coaching, we're opening up so that it's available to all people basically who do healing work. All you have to do is some training in that area. So be looking for that, and everything is on the website. If you have any... Oh, sure. And I do have some business cards with me. Thank you, Anne.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Now, this was for one specific incident. What about a person who has multiple, say, trauma experiences? Can you collapse all of those into this one, or do you have to do an individual one for each one of those?
Well, if you're talking about someone who has serious trauma, let's start with somebody who has complex trauma. They've had a number of incidents over their life, could be coupled with neglect or something like that, poor contacts and connections with caregivers and stuff like that. You would start with the biggest one. I'll give the example. There's a video. If you go on my website, there's an 80-minute introduction to MEMI. It's in the, if you look, the video tab, it'll go to a YouTube channel. And there's a video there of a woman who witnessed her husband jump out the window in front of her 15 stories up and kill himself. And I did that work with her in 90 minutes. Okay? We neutralized that memory, but she had a second problem state. She ran down the stairs into the street and saw her husband there, and there were people around talking and saying things that weren't cool. So we did a Zoom session on that. Now, we're talking about desensitizing the acute responses that people have to difficult memories, okay? We're talking about the physical symptoms, the emotional symptoms, and the sensory things that go along with them, the imagery and possibly the sounds. In her case, the sound was thud, right? And at the end of three sets, the thud was gone. She didn't hear it anymore. So you can do that, but remember that when you work with really traumatized people, they still have habitual patterns that they had as a result of being traumatized, like not trusting or, getting having difficulty with relationships. So those are things that you continue to work on. But normally you start with the most difficult one.
Okay. Like domestic violence, where multiple times a female would go through an experience of domestic violence. Can you just summarize that emotion for, it would be different experiences, but it's still all kind of the same thing.
Yeah. So two things. First of all, you have to get an agreement to change. A woman can't, or a man who's, abused, could be war, right? You have to get the agreement that they don't want to have these sensations anymore. If the woman knows that she's going to go back to the man again, that's an impediment. So you have to do some work around that. You have to talk about what are you going to do? What's your plan after this? The future rehearsal is going to be no good because she's going to be back right there and she's going to anticipate the same thing happening again. All right, so that's one thing.
But she's recreating more
trauma. Yeah. But the second thing is you normally start with the most difficult. You ask her, I want you to think about the one that is the hardest for you to think about? The one that you can't dismiss when you come up, when it comes up, or the one that is intrusive, keeps coming in all the time? And even if you don't get the perfect one, when you're doing MEMI, if it's not the perfect one, the one that needs to come up often will supplant what you're doing. So if there's something behind here, what will happen is it'll come up while you're doing the eye movements, and then you say, okay, let's put aside what we were doing until now, let's address this one with MEMI, and then usually the one before it has subsided. I think we're out of time, but I'll be around. You want to ask some questions.